The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church in Ackerman, Mississippi. We invite you to visit Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church for worship services every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Macedonia is located at 11 Staten Road on Highway 15, 5 miles north of Ackerman, Mississippi. For more information about Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church, you may visit our website at macedonia-pbc.org.
This morning to turn to Mark chapter 14. Mark chapter 14, and we'll begin reading in verse 3. And being in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at meat, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment of spikenard, very precious. And she brake the box and poured it on his head. And there were some that had indignation within themselves and said, why was this waste of this ointment made? For it might have been sold for more than 300 pence and have been given to the poor. And they murmured against her. And Jesus said, let her alone. Why trouble ye her? She hath wrought a good work on me. For ye have the poor with you always. And whensoever ye will, ye may do good to them. But me ye have not always. She hath done what she could. She has come beforehand to anoint my body to the burying. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she hath done shall be spoken of for a memorial of her. Now, we have this account also given to us in Matthew chapter 26 and in John chapter 12, and particularly in John chapter 12, in Mark's account, he simply describes this as being a woman. But in John's account, he attributes this action to Mary, the sister of Martha and the sister of Lazarus. And it says in John chapter 12 that Mary took a pound of ointment of spikenard, very costly. It was very expensive to acquire a portion of this ointment and this spikenard. And notice who the scoffing party is attributed to here in John chapter 12, though. It says in verse 4 that one of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, which should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 pence and given to the poor? This he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the bag and bare what was put therein. And then Jesus says something very similar. Let her alone. Against the day of my burying has she kept this. For the poor always ye have with me, but me ye have not always. So notice who the scoffer is. It's Judas Iscariot. And it's not that he is concerned about the actual care of the poor. No, Judas was a thief. He held the bag. In other words, he carried the, they didn't have bank accounts per se back then, so he carried the physical bag that had the money that the disciples kind of operated on. And Judas was unfaithful in caring for that treasury. He was a dishonest treasurer, and he stole from that bag. He stole from the funds that were provided to Jesus and to the apostles to care for them. So understand, this accusation against Mary was not really about the poor. It was not really about trying to make a good, positive contribution to those that were in need. Instead, he just wanted more money in the pot so he could steal more money out of the pot. Okay? So, Judas, and by the way, Jesus rebukes him here. He tells him in verse 6, let her alone. Judas wanted more money in the pot so he could steal more money. And then, isn't it interesting that right after that, after
he brings this up and Jesus rebukes him. Right after that, in verse 10 in Mark 14, Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went unto the chief priest to betray him unto them. And when they heard it, they were glad and promised to give him money. And he sought how he might conveniently betray him. So right after, Judas brings this accusation against Mary that, hey, you should have used this money to help the poor. Again, he wasn't concerned about the poor. But after Jesus rebukes him, right after that is when he goes and counsels with the chief priests and the Pharisees to betray Jesus. So that tells you how upset Judas was about this, right? But Mary comes and she has an alabaster box of ointment of spikenard that is very precious. And that means costly. It's very expensive. This was not the Walmart knockoff version. All right? This was the expensive stuff. And it is true that this would have been very valuable if it was sold on the open market. This is something that if you sold it, then you could make a good bit of money. And it is true that this probably could have been sold and maybe even got enough financial money out of that to where there's more people that could have been helped from that. But instead, she chooses to, quote, waste this on simply breaking this box on the head of Jesus Christ to anoint him. He says later on to anoint him to the burying. Now, Jesus stands up for Mary against this accusation. He says in verse 6, "Let her alone. Why trouble ye her? She hath wrought a good work on me." Isn't it great to think about the Lord standing up for his children in that way? You know, there is someone that makes a false accusation and mischaracterizes the actions of someone and maybe tries to portray something in an incorrect way about someone's motives or how they chose to allocate their funds, how they chose to live their life, how they chose to use what God has entrusted to them in a manner that they seem appropriate, but in other people's minds, it might not seem appropriate. Jesus says, hey, you leave her alone. Isn't it great to think about the Lord standing up for us that way when people maybe say things about us that aren't exactly true? Hey, leave her alone because you are characterizing this as a bad thing, that she's being wasteful. You leave her alone. Don't trouble her. Why trouble ye her? She hath wrought a good work on me. Isn't that a great commendation of the Lord, right? That he has wrought, or she has wrought a good work on me. This was not wasted, okay? This was a good, honorable, godly thing that she did. For the poor with you, for ye have the poor with you always, and whensoever ye will, you may do good to them, but me ye have not always. Now, Jesus is not necessarily making an economic statement here in the sense of you will always have this class warfare. You will always have someone below a, quote, poverty line, wherever you draw that poverty line. But it is a reality that in this world, there are people that have varying levels of financial success. There are people that have to struggle. That's a reality. And it can be unfortunate. But regardless of any type of societal change, you know, that's something I think we have mischaracterized in America, that we think through some type of social policy or some type of political policy, some war on poverty, that we can eliminate poverty. Well, the fact of the matter is, there's a set amount of money in the world, okay? And it gets allocated to different people. And we're going to look at that here in just a little bit, that the material possessions of this world are not owned by us individually. They're owned by the Lord. And he sees fit to allocate those as he sees fit. And we are obligated to use what God has given us to whatever degree that is, to use what God has given us to his honor and to his glory. But the fact of the matter is, there's always going to be haves and there are always going to be have-nots. Okay? There's going to be people that are wealthy and there's going to be people that are poor. People that have more than enough and people that are going to have to struggle. But what he's emphasizing here with Mary is not necessarily making a political statement, okay? Now, I will say, I do believe that there is a good benefit in having some degree of a safety net for those that can't help themselves, okay? But we do not need to rely solely upon government. Instead, before the government had that safety net, who was the safety net for the poor? It was the church. Did you know that? It was the church that cared for those that couldn't care for themselves, that exhibited the unconditional love of God to those who could not care for themselves. The church, in trying to manifest in a public, practical way the unconditional love of God, it was the church that brought those in and cared for the needs. So there, now, that's quite a condemnation to the church, isn't it? The church has got distracted in using the funds that we have been given to funnel and to fund our own hobbies and to go to all of these sporting events that are now canceled and all these other things that distract us from using what we have not to just do things that are satisfying to our flesh, but to do things that relieve the burden and the suffering of other people. And the structure of who is supposed to provide that safety net for those that can't care for themselves is not your government. We don't pay higher taxes. At least it ought not be this way. We should not pay higher taxes for elected politicians to set policies for a safety net for those that can't care for themselves. That's the responsibility of the church. Do you understand that? Now, the poor are always going to be here. And guess what? That means the church always is going to have a ministry, right? If it's the church's responsibility to care for those that are disadvantaged, especially financially, that means that it is a ministry that the church will always have. Jesus gave some instructions in Matthew chapter 6 about how you're supposed to give alms. Now, the Bible does not teach that you should write a straight 10% check to your church, and after that, your giving is satisfied in the sight of God. Now, there was a 10% requirement for certain provisions in the Old Testament law that, and a tithe literally means a tenth, so there was a tenth tithe provision in the Old Testament. But guess what? We're not under the Old Testament. We're under the New Testament. We're under grace. We're not under the law. And there is no New Testament requirement to give 10%. And actually, by the way, if you go back and you look at all of the various tenth things that they had to give, and you kind of multiply all that out, you're going to find that the people of Israel were given a whole lot more than 10% to the Lord. They were given probably closer to like 25%. If you look at all of the different things, all of the different tenth tithe requirements that they were giving. So there's an idea in America that all I have to do is take my gross salary, or some people only do it on net, but my gross salary, multiply it by 10%, write a check to the church, and I have done my duty to give to other people. Well, the New Testament sets no requirement for a 10% tithe. Instead, it says you need to give cheerfully, give joyfully, not begrudgingly. And I believe there's a whole lot of people that think that they're doing the right thing by determining what they give by a 10% calculation, that even that 10%, they're giving it begrudgingly instead of cheerfully. Instead, Jesus talks about in Matthew chapter 6, giving alms to those that are in need. Giving alms is providing for the poor. I tell you, there were a lot of poor in Jerusalem. There's a lot of poor people in Judea. And he says, look, you're going to have poor folks all the time for you to provide this ministry to. You're going to have poor folks all the time to give alms, because there's always going to be somebody that's in need. There's always, and by the way, let's just talk for a minute. There's a lot of people that are having a very difficult time right now. Okay? And I do not want to undervalue or diminish that in any way. But we can always look at our circumstances and find someone that's worse off than us. And part of what I want to present to you this morning is to have that mindset and to have that vision to be evaluating our lives, evaluating the people around us, and to do what we can to help those that are in need. And I guarantee you, if you look out in, you probably don't have to look that far, in your immediate circle, you will probably find that there are people that have it worse off than you that you can help if you make a commitment to. Okay? The poor, you're going to have with you always. There's always going to be people that are in need. There's always going to be people out there that are not just need help financially. They need help with something on their home. They need help with their yard being mowed. They need help, older people that need help with their groceries being bought. There's a lot of things that we can do to help other people, especially during this time, but we don't need to just rise to the occasion during a crisis time. This is the way we need to live our lives as disciples of Christ, okay? The poor you have with you always, but me, you don't have always. In other words, there is a very limited period of time for her to make this sacrifice and anoint the head of Jesus. And this is a very special thing that she did, by the way. He said that she, verse 8, she hath done what she could, and she has come beforehand to anoint my body to the burying. You know, there were some ointments and some spices that Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea used to anoint the body of Jesus after he had passed away. After he gave up the ghost, rather. And they were burying his body. They anointed him, but she was pre-anointing him. And Jesus kind of highlights that. And she is taking advantage of the opportunity that she has, and she's redeeming the time. Right? She is redeeming the time. Now, that phrase at the beginning of verse 8 is really what I want us to think about together this morning. Okay? Verse 8, Mark chapter 14. She hath done what she could. She hath done what she could. You know, I think during this period where many of us are limited from our normal life, limited from going out and just transacting normal business and going and doing things to have fun and to have social gatherings and things like that, you know, we're restricted in what we can do, so therefore, we don't know what to do. I mean, we're just so busy, right? And now we have the great privilege of being forced to not be very busy. And now the question is, how do I channel my activities? Right? How do I redeem the time? How do I use the time that I have to the best of my ability? And then maybe you have maybe a little bit too much time on your hands and you're thinking about everything you need to do. Right? you think about the totality of everything. And I remember, I was especially this way in school, but in other things as well. At the beginning of school, a semester, especially in college, we would get a syllabus and we would have a listing out of everything that we were going to have to do for that semester. And I would get a calendar and I'd map out that this is what I'm going to have on my test. And then, of course, it inevitably fell that on a certain week you'd have just, you know, 3 or 4 tests, and one of those is just going to be a horrible week. And I would get so stressed at the beginning of the semester because I felt the weight of the entire semester at one time. And it's not intended for me to handle an entire semester's worth of work or pressure or stress at one time. No, it's supposed to be spread over a 3 or 4 month period, right? So sometimes when you're limited and you think about everything you need to do, you're like, oh my goodness, where do I start, right? You feel the weight of everything that you need to be doing and that you should be doing, but you don't know where to start. I think this admonition is so simple. First of all, you got to start somewhere. But she said, or Jesus says, commending Mary, she hath done what she could. Now, her time with Jesus was limited. And it seems like Mary had maybe been paying attention a little bit more than even some of the apostles. When Jesus kept saying, hey guys, I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to be raised again the third day. I'm going to be going away. He'd been telling the disciples this repetitively. And Mary had been there. And she'd been hearing that. It seems like it wasn't really clicking with the apostles, but I think that it was kind of clicking with Mary a little bit. And she realized, you know what? My time period with Jesus is going to be limited. And I want to take what I have, which is, first of all, my time with Jesus. And I want to use my material possessions to honor the Lord to the best of my ability with what I have at my disposal. Okay? I think one of the most important things to be reminded of, now certainly this is her making a financial sacrifice, but the most valuable commodity that you have is not money. The most valuable commodity that you have is time. Okay? Because you can always probably go find at least a couple odd jobs to make a little bit of extra money. Now, they may not be pleasant jobs, but you can generally go find something to go make a little bit of extra money, even if it's not that much. But there are other avenues that you can better utilize the things that you have. But I want to tell you the one thing that you can never get back, and that is time. Okay? And I will say we don't need to neglect other arenas, and we're going to talk about some of those other things. We're going to talk about some of those other arenas, but the most valuable thing that you can use in service to the Lord is your time. Because I'll tell you, our life is a vapor, right? And the time that we have together is a vapor. I think we're realizing that, aren't we? We're realizing that the time that we have to spend with our loved ones, the time that we have to spend with our friends and with our church family, those are more limited than we would really like to acknowledge. So you need to redeem the time. And you need to take what you have and use it to the best of your ability to help others, and to glorify the Lord. So let's not forget what the greatest commandment is, right? To love God with all of our heart and all of our soul and all of our mind, and then to do what? To love other people. And how do you exhibit, one of the primary ways, that you exhibit your love to the Lord? It's by helping other people, right? Remember what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 25? Inasmuch as you've done it to the least of these my brethren, you've done it unto me. Now, think about it like this. Mary was, in her present circumstance, she had the ability to go break a box of ointment over the head of Jesus Christ, God manifest in the flesh. Wow, right? Now, do we have that ability? No. Jesus has been resurrected. He's gone to heaven. He's on the right hand of God in heaven. So do we have the ability to go break a box of alabaster ointment over the Son of God, God manifest in the flesh? No, we don't have that. She could do that. Okay? But we can't. But what you can do is those activities that Jesus described in Matthew 25 that were indicative of God's children, that were evidences of fruit of the Spirit. Notice Matthew chapter 25 when he's talking to the sheep over here on the right hand. Okay? And he says, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was a hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me." And the righteous answered him and said, "Lord, when did we see you? When did we see Jesus Christ, God manifest in the flesh? When did we see you a hungry and feed you, or thirsty and drink and give you a drink? And when did we see you as a stranger and take you in?" And then in verse 40, Jesus says, the king here says, "Verily I say unto you, in so as much as ye have done it unto the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me." So if you want to love your neighbor and exhibit love to God, how do you do that? By loving other people. By helping other people. Helping other people in their time of need and doing what you can. Now, I think this is why this is important. Because I think children of God have a desire to help other people. Right? They have a desire to sacrifice what they have to benefit someone else. But you may be in a very difficult financial strait right now. You may be not just in a financial restriction, but you may be in a time constriction due to job, due to children, due to helping a family member. There's multitudes of things that give pressure and that challenge our time. But you have to start by taking the first step, right? And I think this perspective is a great attitude to keep in the midst of that. She had done what she could. What did she have at her disposal? You know, I don't have any control or influence with the decisions that are being made at the federal, state, and local levels in regards to how we're responding to this crisis. I don't have any real firsthand. Now, I can vote my representatives, and if I don't like how they act, I can vote them out, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I mean? But I don't have any firsthand influence on the way that this is being responded. Now, I can pray. We need to pray for our leaders, and we certainly hope that the Lord will move the leaders to act in accordance in the manner that they ought to, okay? But I don't have any control over this situation. Not really. So, instead of just saying, "Well, I don't know what I'm going to do," I would encourage you to just do what you can, right? Do what you can. Start somewhere. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of people that stand in need during this circumstance. And it's not just about someone that lost their job giving them money to buy groceries. Now, if you have the ability to do that, you need to. Okay? The Lord burdens you to do that. We don't need to be selfish. We need to view the possessions that we have in a way that they are simply things that have been handed to us as stewards and custodians for us to use that to help other people. Notice this in 1 Chronicles chapter 29. The people of Israel had been very generous and had been very gracious in giving of their own goods and their own materials to fund the construction and the furnishing of the temple, Solomon's temple. And it says in 1 Chronicles chapter 29 and verse 9, "Then the people rejoiced that they offered willingly, because with a perfect heart they offered willingly to the Lord. And David the king also rejoiced with great joy." Now, remember what the New Testament says that we've already mentioned. God loves a cheerful giver. Cheerful, not begrudgingly. Not saying, "Well, the Lord told me I got to do it, so I got to write this check." No. These people gave willingly, joyfully to the house of God. But notice David's response to this. Notice David's response to their generous gracious giving to the house of God. David says, he blessed the congregation, and he says in verse 11, "Thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty, for all that is in heaven and in earth is thine." It all belongs to the Lord. Okay? The cattle on 1,000 hills, it's his, but guess what? The cattle on all the rest of the hills are his too. That's important to keep in mind if you're a farmer, but guess what? I'm not a farmer, but I do like steak, and I do like hamburgers, and a lot of different ways that that cattle on 1,000 hills is prepared that tastes really good. And guess what? All of that is the Lord's. Riches and honor, they're the Lord's. And he gives them to who he sees fit. Verse 12, "Both riches and honor come of thee, and thou reignest over all, and in thine hand is power and might, and in thine hand it is to make great and to give strength unto all." Verse 14, "But who am I, and what is my people, that we should be able," they had the ability, "to give so willingly after the sword." Now notice this phrase, and you need to remember this in the way that you act as a steward to not just the money, the finances, but the assets and the material possessions that God entrusts to you here in time. David says in 1 Chronicles chapter 29 and verse 14, "For all things come of thee, and of thine own have we given." Now that's an entirely different perspective, isn't it? The reason why people give begrudgingly is they say, "This is my money, and I have the right to choose to spend it however I see fit." But instead, the child of God's perspective should say, "This is all the Lord's." You know, think about Job's perspective after he lost all of his material possessions. What did he say? "You know what? Naked came I into this world. Naked I'm going to leave hither. I came into this world with nothing, and guess what? I'm going out with nothing too. The Lord gave, but you know what? Now my circumstances have occurred, and now the Lord's taken away. But in spite of that, blessed be the name of the Lord." Okay? Why? Because it's yours anyway. Right? It's yours. And then when I give back to the Lord, I'm simply giving back to the Lord in worship and honor to him what's already his. So it's not me being so gracious to the Lord to give him part of what's mine. No. It's me showing gratitude that what is already the Lord's, I'm offering back to him in worship, to give back to him, to thank him for what he has saw fit to entrust to me to be a steward of for a brief period of time. Because we showed up with nothing, we're going to leave with nothing, and now the material possessions we have in the middle, we need to use what we have as stewards to help other people. Okay? But this is why it's important to do what you can. Because the fact of the matter is, we all don't have $500 laying around to give to people that when they need $500. We don't. Right? Very few people do. But you can do what you can. Right? Now, let's talk very briefly about finances for just a minute. Now, in Galatians chapter 6 and in verse 10, we've already said that the New Testament does not support a New Testament tithe. Okay? There's nothing in the Bible, there's nothing in the New Testament that tells you you need to calculate what you give to the church based on a calculation of your gross income. Okay? But if you have the attitude that all of this that I've been given is the Lord's, and he saw fit to entrust it to me for a brief period of time, and I want to use what God has given me to his honor and to his glory, and therefore I want to offer back to him what he's given me in worship, you know, we should probably have a compunction to realize if 100% of it's his, maybe he should get a little bit more than 10%. That's something to think about. But we need to give according to our ability. Okay? Now we're going to go to Galatians 6 here in just a minute. Before we read that, I want to look at Acts chapter 11 real quick. Acts chapter 11 and in verse 28, there stood up one of them named Agabus and signified by the Spirit that there should be a great dearth throughout all the world, which came to pass in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then the disciples, every man according to his ability, okay, according to his ability, determined to send relief unto the brethren which dwelt in Judea. So we give according to our ability. There are times, and I know it's kind of like a graph, an up and down graph in my life. Sometimes I have the ability, you know, a little bit of a cushion to help someone out, and sometimes it's a little bit tighter. And I'm sure that circumstance is true for you as well. But here's just the mindset that we need to have. When we have extra, how do we think about that extra? Is it saving up so I can take one really lavish vacation? Now, vacations are good. You need some R&R. You need to reboot. But am I saving up to buy some bass boat? Am I saving up to buy some other trinket? You know, some whatever your hobby is that you're indulging in. Well, that excess, what are you doing with the excess? Now, I am by no means the standard. But I want to tell you, my personal conviction is that I do my best to give to our local church that I'm a member of, which is Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church, to provide for the financial requirements for that church. But I have also built into my budget a floater amount that I want to have, an amount, and that amount might vary by month, to be able to give to others when circumstances arise and when there's a severe need. In other words, I have, you know, let's say this month it might be $50, $100, whatever, that I have built into my budget that when I see someone is in a financial need, I have the ability to, I have giving to my church, and that's taken care of, but I have an additional amount that's somewhat budgeted for almsgiving, if you'll let me tell you that. And I hope you understand I'm not being Matthew 6 and trying to blow a trumpet in how I attempt to give to other people. I'm trying to give you some practical suggestions to do what you can. To do what you can. That buffer, that extra amount that you have, how do you view that extra amount? Is it giving to help someone in need? Is it giving to help that single mother that's struggling? Is it giving to help that, there's going to be a lot of people like this, that family that the husband has lost their job? Or is it me putting money back so I can buy some really fancy bass boat? Is it me putting money back so I can take some very extravagant vacation? I think that we can evaluate ourselves and say, you know what? There's a lot more I can do. Okay? I can do what I can. As you have the ability. Now, your ability can vary. But I think it's also important to have the correct mindset, because we have more of an ability than we think we do. I'll put it like that. Galatians chapter 6, he's been teaching about sowing and reaping. In other words, if you sow to the Spirit, you're going to be blessed. If you cast your bread upon the waters, the Bible tells us it will return unto you after many days. And you know what? And what's amazing about being gracious to help other people is that, you know what? If you give when you have the ability, maybe you have that extra $100 this month, and instead of me indulging in something, buying some new clothes that maybe I don't need, instead of me indulging in something, maybe I give to someone that's in need. Well, you know what? Inevitably, the time will come where you're on the other side of that equation. You don't have an extra $100. You're in need of $100. Okay? But it's been my experience in regards to sowing and reaping. It says in verse 9, let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. In regards to casting your bread upon the waters and it will return unto you after many days, it's been my experience that when I've made a commitment to help someone else, when I have the ability, during the time that comes where I stand in need, there are other people that are burdened in the same way that maybe they have the ability right now, but they didn't have the ability 3 months ago. Maybe they were the person that was in need 3 months ago, and I helped them out during their time of need when I had the ability, but now the roles are reversed. And I am the person that stands in need. But you know what? Maybe that other person, now they've been blessed. Maybe that husband has got a job now, and now they have the ability, and now they have more ability, and they want to help you that's in need. What I'm saying is, the times that I have made a commitment to help other people, when the time came that I was in need, God always supplied that need. Always. Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. And then he says in verse 10 of Galatians 6, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. As you have opportunity. Now, in a financial way, you may not always have opportunity. Okay? You may not always have the opportunity to give that extra $100. Maybe you're the person that's in need of that extra $100 this month. But I believe if we're honest with ourselves, we can evaluate our lives and say, you know what? I have a good bit more opportunities than maybe I take advantage of. Okay? I have more ability than I realize. As we have opportunity, let us do good unto all men, but especially unto those that are of the household of faith. Okay? Now, in a financial way, if you have the ability, I think there's going to be a lot of opportunity for you to help people. Okay? There's a lot of people that are going to be losing jobs. There's a lot of people that are lost. They're probably going to be losing their small businesses. There's a lot of financial suffering that's going to be coming. And it's just a reality, unfortunately. And if you have the opportunity, you have the ability, I hope that you will pray for the direction and the guidance of the Lord for how you can allocate that to help other people. But I want to talk not just about finances. We need to do what we can. But I want you to do what you can to help other people with your time and with your physical abilities. Okay? Let's look at Romans chapter 12 for just a minute. Romans chapter 12. This describes some spiritual gifts in the church. Okay? Romans chapter 12, and it describes spiritual gifts in the context of a body. And what I was saying earlier is that you might be the person this month that has that extra $100, and you might be the person that stands in need next month of the $100. But what happens with a body is that when one member of the body is struggling, the rest of the members of the body rise to the occasion to compensate for the weakness of that other body. You know, have you ever had a sore knee and then you're maybe walking with a little bit of a limp and then all of a sudden your other knee's hurting you? Well, why? Because your body is compensating for the weakness of one member and it's adding additional strain on the rest of the members. But God has created our bodies in a way that we can encourage and help other members of the body. Okay? And that's why he presents the church as a body here. So he says in Romans chapter 12 and verse 4, as we have many members in one body, and all members have not the same office, so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and every one members one of another. Then having gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy according to the proportion of faith, or ministry, let us wait on ministry. Or he that teaches, on teaching, he that exhorteth on exhortation, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity, he that ruleth with diligence, he that showeth mercy with cheerfulness. Let love be without dissimulation. Now, we don't have time to go through all of these, okay? But what I want you to think about is that, what abilities do you have? Do you remember that language that was used in Acts chapter 11? It said that as they had ability, they gave to those that were in need. Now, you need to have, and we have different abilities to give financially, but I want us to think about all the other abilities that we have to help other people and to do what we can. Remember, she did what she could. Every single child of God has been gifted with a spiritual gift. Okay? Now, let's look at some of these. He that talks about the spiritual gift, you know, ministry. Someone has a spiritual gift of ministry. Ministry is to serve. Now, we all have a responsibility to serve, right? But there's some that have been given a special spiritual gift of service. We all have, he that giveth, let him do it with simplicity. We all have a responsibility to give to other people. But there's others that have a spiritual gift of giving. And by the way, your cop-out for not giving to other people is not that, oh, I don't have the spiritual gift. No. You give whether you have the spiritual gift or not, okay? But there's some that have a great spiritual gift to do that, right? You know, it's interesting how some of these spiritual gifts kind of manifest themselves in our personalities, they manifest themselves in our profession. You know, I'm an accountant, I'm CPA, I'm not in public accounting anymore, but I'm an accountant to the core, unfortunately. Lord help me. And at least in some way, I have used some of my accounting abilities. I've helped out with some of the finances in the church. I keep up with some finances with some ministerial stuff that I have with some other ministers. I summarize our financial statements for our church just because I like doing it. I'm good at it. If I would have stayed at my home church back in Bethany, there's a lot of accountants that end up as treasurers in the church, right? But you may not be a money guy. You may not be a math guy, but you know what? You may be a carpenter. I love Brother Joel now, and he's a deacon at Macedonia Church, and he's probably tuning in, and I know he hates for me to talk and brag on him, but he's one of the guys that has taken care of the physical facilities of our church because he's a carpenter. And anytime there's a leak, anytime there's something that's patched up, he does it. Why? Because he has the ability to do it. Now, I'll tell you, I don't have the ability too much. You know, I can drive a nail in with a hammer. I can screw a screw with a Phillips head screwdriver. But I don't have a lot of ability to help out in building on to the church. You know, we're going to have to contract that out to somebody. But that's something Brother Joel's been very gifted with. And he's used it. He has used what he had in service to others, in service to the Lord. Notice this language. In Exodus chapter 35, here they're building the tabernacle. Here they're building the tabernacle. And God is going to use the physical abilities of certain men in the construction of this tabernacle. Exodus chapter 35, and in verse 30, Moses said unto the children of Israel, see, the Lord hath called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, the tribe of Judah. And notice this. He, God hath filled him, Bezalel, with the Spirit of God in wisdom and understanding and knowledge and all manner of workmanship, to devise curious works, to work in gold and silver and brass and cutting of stones. And then in verse 34, he hath put in his heart that he may teach both he and Aholiab, the son of Ashachemach, maybe, and of the tribe of Dan, them hath he filled with wisdom of heart to work all manner of work for the engraver and the cunning of workmen and the embroider and blue and purple and scarlet, etc., etc., and those that devise cunning works. You know, it's kind of really sad in America that we think that every single person that graduates high school is supposed to go to college and get a four-year degree and be a white-collar worker like me. I'm a white-collar worker, by the way. We think that's what everybody's supposed to do. No, there's a lot of physical trade type professions that not only are people good at, but they have been given talents by the Lord to be able to do it. You know, if you're a plumber, you know, use your plumbing knowledge to help out your church when they have plumbing problems. Use your plumbing knowledge to help out members of the church when they have. Now, that doesn't mean you just get work for free all the time, but you use the ability that you have to help other people. And notice this language about Bezalel. He says, look, I have given him, God speaking, God says, I have given him a spirit of knowledge to be a very skilled artisan in crafting gold and silver and all these different things. It's not just that he had a good knack for it. The Lord gave him that ability. And he said, you know what? I didn't give him that ability so he could make graven images, right? I didn't give him that ability to craft all of types of gold, silver, and brass so he can make all these graven images and make a whole bunch of silver and gold and have a nice little shop and make a bunch of money. No, I have given him. That doesn't mean he can't use it in business. That doesn't mean he can't use it in his profession. Instead, use the natural abilities that you have, that God's given you, to serve the Lord in His church and to serve other people. Okay? And there's a lot of opportunity for you to do that. There's some things that anybody can do. Okay? Anybody can go shop for the older people that are in high risk categories during this coronavirus. Okay? But I don't have the ability to go fix, let's say someone, some physical structure was damaged in a tornado. We have a lot of tornadoes here in North Mississippi. I'm not very skilled enough. I don't really have the ability to go help anybody out too much. But there's those of you that do. I want to commend Sulphur Springs Church. Last year in April, they had their annual meeting that was interrupted by a tornado. It was a tornado that ran through Hamilton, through Monroe County, that was right there, right down the road from the church, right down the road from Brother Joe, their pastor's house. And they had a whole bunch of kids over due to the annual meeting, and they were planning on having a big old time, but instead of having church that morning, instead of having church, members of the church and the young folks that stayed at their house, they went and they were getting chainsaws and cutting trees. They were picking up those that had their houses damaged. You know, everyone has the ability to do that. What I'm saying is, do what you can. Do what you can. You have the ability. And lastly, I'll try to wrap this up. It says in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Right? Do it with the very best you have. Do the very best that you can. And there are many similar admonitions in the scriptures and in the New Testament of that. Let's look at Colossians chapter 3, verse 17 real quick. Whatsoever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God. Then verse 23, whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord. In other words, whatever you do, whatever you have the ability to do, whatever you have the opportunity to do, give it the very best you have. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31. If you don't know this verse, you need to know it. You need to memorize this, because the whole purpose while we're here is to glorify God. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 31. Whether therefore you eat or drink, whatsoever you do, do all the glory of God. No matter how, in your mind, how little it might appear. Do what you can. Use your time wisely. Because I'll tell you, time is something we can never get back. That is something that we have the ability to spend in service to God and service to others. And you know what? Your time is probably a little bit more free right now than it was 3 weeks ago. Use that time to spend with your kids, parents, use that time to read the Bible with them, to pray with them, to pray with your wife, to pray with your kids, to study the Bible yourself, to find members of your church, of your community that stand in need, and how can I help them? Okay? Use your time that you have to the best of your ability to serve God and to serve others. Do what you can. And the concluding commendation that the Lord gives in Mark chapter 14 and in verse 9, "Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she hath done shall be spoken of for a memorial for her." Isn't it amazing? There's a lot of people that have done tremendous things in service to God and in service to others. But isn't it amazing that the Holy Spirit saw fit to highlight this in a way that here in the 21st century America, we know about this and we're speaking about this here today? Isn't that amazing? Wherever this gospel is preached, it is a memorial unto her. Now remember, that teaching of Jesus in Matthew chapter 6, when he's telling us how to pray, how to give alms, how to fast, the whole main focus of that is, hey, you don't do it to draw attention to yourself. You don't do it so you can get any praise for it. Instead, he says earlier in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 16, we do good works, we let our light shine, that men may see our good works and glorify our Father which is in heaven. Not to glorify ourselves, not to draw attention to ourselves, but to glorify our Father which is in heaven. Okay? Now, we don't do it to get praise of men. We don't do it to get a pat on the back. But isn't it amazing how the Lord gives this testimony that what she did here, is going to be highlighted for centuries upon centuries for a memorial of her? You know, I have seen the sacrifices of many people that gave when it hurt to give. You know, they did what they could, and they had ability, and they had opportunity, and they wanted to use the little bit that they had to help other people and to serve the Lord. And you know, just like the widow that gave two mites, I meant to read that earlier, Mark chapter 12, two chapters before this, Mark chapter 12, verse 41. Jesus sat over against the treasury and beheld how people cast money into the treasury, and many that were rich cast in much. But there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in two mites, which made a farthing. And he called unto them his disciples, and said unto them, "Verily I say unto you, that this poor widow hath cast in more than they all have cast in the treasury, for all they have cast in their abundance, but she of her want," which literally means her poverty, "out of her poverty she did cast in all that she had, even all of her living." I have seen people that didn't have much, but I'll tell you, they did what they could. And their sacrifice in the limited amount that they had, but their sacrifice was more of an encouragement and a testimony to me than people that were very well off that gave considerably more financially to the church or financially to help other people. There are others that I have seen the way that they have conducted their life in giving and making their life about being a cheerful giver to bless other people. And their life has been a memorial to me. It's been an encouragement and a testimony to me of the type of sacrificial mindset that I should have with the possessions that have been entrusted to me. I want to use those in a way that's honoring to the Lord and blessing to other people. Now, we don't do it to have other people pat us on the back, but I'll tell you, if Mary's example is an encouragement to me, or if someone else's example is an encouragement to me, We don't do it to blow a trumpet to get recognition, but if it encourages them to help other people and it's a memorial to them, then I think that's a very profitable thing. Okay? At the end of the day, you don't do it to get pats on the back. You don't do it to have the praise of men. But every now and then, the Lord gives you a little token of assurance. And He lets you know down in your heart when the Lord has given you 10 talents, when the Lord's given you 5 talents, and you use what's been entrusted to you, you're a steward of those 5 talents. This is Matthew chapter 25. When you use those talents, the money, the finances, the time, the ability, what God has entrusted to you, you use the 5 talents that God has entrusted to you, and you use those to have profit and increase, and you have 5 talents more, the Lord told those people, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And every now and then, you know, it's not a Facebook post. By the way, don't give to somebody and take a selfie and post on Facebook, okay? Give, let your left hand not know what your right hand's doing, okay? But one of these days, if you commit to that, the Lord will give you that commendation of assurance and peace in your heart. And there's nothing better than the Lord to tell you down in your heart, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Okay? Now, I'm not concerned about that being publicized. But I think there's a couple times that I've tried to do the right thing, I've tried to make a sacrifice, and I think the Lord has told me, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And I'll tell you, that is more of a memorial in my life than anything else, that any financial blessings, any promotions, you just take your pick, whatever the world has to offer, just the assurance knowing that I've especially served the Lord by serving other people, that I've tried to insow as much as you've done to the least of these, my brethren, you've done unto me. When the Lord gives you that commendation down in your heart, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant," there's no greater blessing than that, to know that in some small way I've honored the Lord in what He's entrusted to me, and I've used it in a way that's honoring to Him. But it also can be a memorial to other people. Again, we don't blow a trumpet to draw attention to it, but it can be a memorial to encourage other people, that men may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. So go out and do what you can. That's the whole thought I want to leave you with. Do what you can. Use your time. Use your ability. Use your God-given spiritual gifts, your God-given physical talents. And as you have ability, use your finances as well to help other people, to relieve their suffering, to exhibit the unconditional love of God to other people as we have ability. Go do what you can, just like Mary did.
We thank you for listening to today's message and invite you to visit Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church for worship services every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Macedonia is located at 11 Staten Road on Highway 15, 5 miles north of Ackerman, Mississippi. For further information about Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church, you may visit our website at macedonia-pbc.org.